Hello, this is Bill Hancock from Faithbridge Foster Care, and you're listening to Voices of Foster Care.
So the girls have been with you now 3 years?
Yes.
Wow, 3 years, and now you have a fourth girl that has moved into your family. Right. And talk to me a little bit about what it's like when a child first comes to your home, those firsts. This video is going to be viewed by folks in Impact or Orientation at Faithbridge through their local church. And many of them are kind of thinking through, is this really where I'm heading? How does this work? Let's talk a little bit about those first. When the girls first come into your family, first 24 hours, first 48, 72, first week, you know, first time in bed, first time we have dinner, first time they get the tour of the home, first time they go to church and you do the introduction at the youth meetings and the youth groups, and all those really anxiety-provoking moments, particularly for teens.
Definitely.
How do you deal with that?
Well, the great news is with the 10-year-old we've brought in now is I've been through it. So I can see the signs and I know how to react to them a little, maybe better. But I try to run the household with a lot more humor because humor will tone down irritations a whole lot quicker than just directing, nagging, things like that. So the firsts are typically, I'm just going to say chaos. They typically don't have boundaries, organization, or order. And that you know, is something that helps a family thrive. So they come in and you can follow them around the house. There's the shoes, there's the socks, there's the book, there's the cup, there, you know. So just trying to get that part of that chaos. And there's chaos of rules. They're not used to our rules. We're not used to their interpretation of our rules. So it's just, again, slow boundaries, pick your battles, you know, and working with counselors, obviously we do that, and they kind of help guide us on, well, let's try to work on this part first. And, you know, for our girls, it was definitely they just weren't used to any kind of order. So time management meant nothing. So I kind of had to teach them just, this is when you should get up. This is when you should go to bed.
Right.
This is what you need to do to prepare in the hours you have left. I mean, it was just really kind of basic. Same thing like the first foods. You know, their first reaction is to control what they know, which is safe. So they're going to look at your food and say, ew, you know. And now with the 10-year-old, 2 months later, I get that once a week versus every meal. You know, so she's kind of little by little realized, hey, this is pretty good stuff. But there'll always be a lot of resistance, and you have to look at it from their perspective. They're coming in, new friends, new church, new school, new rules, new house, new everything, and it's just overwhelming. So you must keep that in your mind, that if you were in their shoes, you would be terrified. So just that just helps you as the parent go, this is okay. This is just baby step it, you know? School, you know, you're trying to figure out where are they at with school. Do they have any study habits? Is their study habit mean I looked at it a week ago in school during study hall, or is it really I actually know how to study? So you just really learn a lot about what do they know, how do they act, what can I work to guide them on, TV, parental block, internet, parental block, what you need to, keystroke software.
Yeah.
And that's for their safety. And I talk about that with them right away.
Okay. How do you talk about internet safety, media consumption, and while there has to be rules and boundaries with that?
I just pretty much lay it down right away because you got to get that mindset in them first so they don't think you've given them freedom and then taken it away. So our first thought is, you know, this is a godly run house. We are not going to watch shows or look at things on the internet that are going to degrade you. So if there's anything R-rated or very degrading, it's blocked because we don't want that filling your head up with images. On the internet, there's a lot of bad people out there, and we're going to keep you safe from that until you can get a better idea of what the safe person is and what the safe person is not. And I said, and I will monitor, you know, your chats and things like that, because again, predators are everywhere. I'm going to trust you till I can't, but I have to monitor you as well, just being a parent. I have to monitor my own kids. I'm going to monitor you. I don't want you hurt.
Yeah.
And I position everything with, I'm doing this to protect you because you're 10 and I'm this age, and I've learned a lot that you just haven't gotten to yet.
Right. Teenagers can sometimes confuse accountability with a lack of trust. How do you sometimes deal with having predictable boundaries with teens that are age appropriate, managing content that is God-honoring? I love the way you said God thinks is awesome. How do you do that and also convey to them it's that these are for your good? It doesn't mean I don't trust you. How do you get that message across?
If there is an issue with trust, not that I keep lists, but I'll keep just a few examples because they're like, you know, they're like us. We're going to want to forget something maybe we didn't do the best the first time around.
Right.
And I'll just say, I maybe don't trust you now, but it's only because these are the things that are still in my mind. So until I feel you've learned the safe way of approaching things, I have to be cautious. So this is a trust issue that I'm watching over you. I'm not trying to get you. I'm watching and training and rearing you up in the best manner. You know, and a little, there's a little resistance, but there's also, even with the 10-year-old, she's kind of like, you know, I really think she is. Even though she wants to do other things, she will listen when I call her out on something to say, this is not the best way to have done this. What would be another way that perhaps would have you feeling a little bit better about yourself right now?
Right.
And just kind of reposition it, kind of give them a training on how to reposition themselves too.
So trust is really something that's reality-based. When I have an experience that's based on something that's true, it's reality, where there's inconsistencies with what someone says or someone does or something that they're maybe doing without being honest, those are real issues. And so I'm hearing you say, look, I don't bring those out to be judgmental or to say, you know, see what you did. It's to say, these are real choices you've made. And when you make those choices, the only way we can build trust is for me to be honest and open and hold you accountable. So that the more you're accountable and the more I see you making good choices, the more I can trust you and move away from where our current experience is at.
Right.
And teenagers understand that. They're they're really bright.
And they've actually, for the most part, they become prouder and prouder of the fact that I don't have to check on as many things anymore.
Right.
They come to me with more information right up the front because they know I'm going to ask it anyway, but they feel like they've covered the situation themselves.
Oh, wonderful.
So they're proactively trying to make sure it's a good, you know, if it's an event they want to go to or a friend they want to hang out with, whatever it might be, they've kind of covered the bases first.
That says something to me. Says that you're being very consistent in your boundaries, you're being very consistent in your expectations, and you're consistent in communicating around those expectations.
Right.
So the responsible teen that by setting those boundaries and by communicating those boundaries and doing that in a non-condemning, non-judgmental, but a very reality-based, conversational way to be able to lay that out, they're starting to realize that you are going to be consistent on these issues. So it would be better for them to just go ahead and unload up front, be real, deal with it, and move on than it is to try and game an adult like oftentimes they've learned to do at school, their friends, their friends' parents. They just they learn to work people. And I hear some parents say, play the game or, you know, game us, and they've learned that adults that are consistent, like I hear you are being, with those safety rules around the internet, standards about what is God-honoring entertainment, how we live our life and set boundaries within our home, those are just consistent factors here. And if you learn to work with those, you actually build trust.
You do. And one of the other parts is you also got to let them fail where they're going to fail. whether that's, you know, they just don't plan to go to bed on time and then they can't get up in the morning and it becomes a consistent pattern. Well, guess what? You miss school, you miss your tests.
Mm.
Your grades start to go down.
And if the grades go down, there's even other consequences.
There's other privileges go away. And we've had a few instances like that. And it's a very quick way for them to learn that my actions really do have consequences. And mom is not going to bail me out every time if I've made the wrong decision. So you got to kind of play that both ways. You kind of watch over them. But at some point, you also got to let them make their decisions and feel the impact themselves.
Yeah. I've always suggested that you not do anything for your teen that they're capable of doing for themselves.
I agree.
And I
force them, you need an application for something, you go up and get it. You need to talk to a teacher, you go up and get it. And for my girls, that's been extremely important because they were very beaten down in their old life. So their ability to be assertive was very, very small. So working them up every day on just being more assertive with a positioning of you got to do this as an adult, so let's be practicing this now.
Yeah.
It's not because I don't want to do it. It's because you need to practice it. And again, I did that with my own children, so they've seen that.
But
forcing them into not being the helicopter mom, but forcing them into taking accountability for what they want.
Yeah, but helicopter mom, you mean just diving in anytime something goes wrong to rescue your child.
And a lot of them have been rescued kind of in a negative way of just not addressing things coming from the back from where they came from. So if you come in to be a helicopter mom and do everything for them, you're not helping them any more than those who just left everything go.
Yeah.
They, little by little, just need to learn their own responsibility.
Hi, this is Bill Hancock, and you've been listening to Voices of Foster Care. Thank you for joining us.